Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from North Rim Bank, supporting economic and business reporting across the state on Alaska Public Media. NorthRimBank.com.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Host Dave Waldron sits down with Irish Club of Alaska President Kate O'Dell. They discuss St. Patrick's traditions, debunk myths, and we even get a recipe for whiskey balls. What are those? Well, you'll just have to stay tuned to find out. We'll also meet some local musicians and hear them play some traditional music in the studio. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, as I meet two young musicians at the top of their game. I'll speak with the winners of this year's Anchorage Civic Orchestra High School Concerto Competition about what it takes to play at a high level, their upcoming concert with the orchestra, and more. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Alaska Public Media is now partnering with an Alaskan auction service so a helpful local team can get the biggest return for the least hassle should you decide to donate your vehicle. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/vehicle.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron and happy St. Patrick's Day to you all. On today's show, we'll be exploring some of the myth and history behind this holiday, hear some Irish music, and maybe even learn a little Gaelic. With me today is a guest that can help us with just about all of that. Kate O'Dell is the president of the Irish Club of Alaska. Kate, welcome to Hometown Alaska and happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Guru Margit. That means thank you.
Well, you'll have to teach me how to say you're welcome.
Oh, okay. I will do that.
So is St. Patrick's Day a pretty big deal for the Irish Club of Alaska? Or is it just, you know, another day?
Oh, no, it's a big day.
Okay.
And actually, it's a big month. I mean, we tend to start our celebrations as soon as it is March 1st.
Okay, so we're already in it.
Right,
all right,
yeah,
like it.
Yeah. And our big event, actually, this year was yesterday. And it's called the Afternoon in Ireland. It's an annual event that we've been doing for, I think, over 30 years. We used to do it in the theater at the museum, but now we're at 49 State Brewing Company. And it's, you know, it's an afternoon of storytelling and poetry and music and dancing, and both the step dancing, which by the Irish Dance Academy of Alaska, and set dancing, which is where people get up and dance in circles and lines and that sort of thing. And it's, as we like to say, it's good crack. And that's spelled C-R-A-I-C. And it just means wonderful, good times. It's like, you know, in New Orleans when they say, les bon temps rouler, let the good times roll.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
In Irish, it's good crack.
Good crack. Yeah, see, I've already learned something. I like it. So you're busy this month, it sounds like.
Yeah.
How did you get involved with the Irish Club of Alaska first?
I moved up to Anchorage from the Kenai Peninsula in 1988, and I very quickly figured out that the Irish Club of Alaska, there was one, except at that point it was called the Irish American Clada Society of Alaska.
Oh, okay.
That was the name of the club then. And I've been a member ever since, 1988, so...
Nice. And you're the president now. How did that happen?
Well, I got elected at the annual meeting in January, and I've been everything but the president all those years. And,
oh, so this is your first term?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Well, as president.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes, exactly. Well, has it been hard to learn that role for you?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. No, because, I mean, we're not a huge organization, mm-hmm. and we don't have a lot of things that I haven't done before. It's just now I sign the checks, you know.
Right. So other than the event yesterday, what is like a typical event that you put on with the club?
Right now we are doing all kinds of things that mostly what we're doing this year in 2025 is small events. So, for example, we're going to have what are called pop-up Gael Talks, which is where people who are learning Irish or who speak Irish get together in an informal setting and just have conversations. And, you know, just not something where if you're worried about making mistakes with speaking your Irish, you don't have to worry about it. And then also we're going to participate in the Celtic Spring Fest, which is an event put on by the Celtic community of Alaska. And we will have a booth there and we'll probably do some teaching of some things. And the next big event, we always have a booth at the Alaskan Scottish Highland Games, which is at the end of June.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then in the fall, we always participate in Samhain. That's spelled Samhain, but it's pronounced Samhain. And it's the precursor to Halloween. So it's the celebration of the what it would be the end of October and the 1st of November, which actually November 1st is a Celtic New Year. So that's the old year, new year. And so we participate in Samhain.
How is that different from Halloween? What's the big difference?
Well, one of the things that the Irish do, the Irish have a more intimate relationship with the other world, shall we say. And one of the aspects of celebrating Samhain is you have an old year fire. And what you do is you put on a slip of paper, everybody puts on a slip of paper, some things about the old year that they want to let go of. You put those in the old year fire, and those kind of, you know, are committed to the other world, as it were. Then you douse the old year fire, and you start the new year fire. And in the new year fire, you put the things that you want to achieve or you want to be better in the new year. And those go into the other world. And what we say is that at that time, the veil between this world and the other world is very thin. So you might be seeing some things that you don't ordinarily see.
Well, see, I like this. This is kind of what I had in mind for the show. Like, we all know about St. Patrick's Day, but there's so much more to Irish culture and tradition than St. Patrick's Day is kind of like the hallmark poster child, you know, and there's so much more.
But you know what, Dave? The thing that people don't know is Ireland actually has three patron saints. There's St. Patrick's. There's my favorite, St. Brigid. And her feast day is February 1st. And then there's St. Columbkeel. And, you know, yes, we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. But actually, in Ireland, all three saints are celebrated equally, unless you're in Dublin. And then, you know, with the tourists, they do more for St. Patrick's Day.
Uh-huh.
But one St. Patrick's Day, I was in the north of Ireland, and it was on that day, that was a religious holiday. The pubs had to close and the restaurants closed and you went to church and they had a little parade, but you didn't do anything like what we do here. So we've adopted it as an excuse to drink green beer, I guess. But in Ireland, it has more richness to how it is considered and celebrated.
Right. So what about St. Brigid makes her your favorite?
One of the things is that she is the patron saint of animals and taking care of people and taking care of the world. And they're all over Ireland. There are what are called St. Brigid's Wells. And, you know, so she made sure that the people of that area had water to drink for their functions. And she was a nun, but she was not somebody who suffered fools, shall we say. And, you know, she, if somebody was in trouble, she would stand up for them. And she was just, she was kind of like, I don't know, a modern woman, but back in her time. And I admire her.
I've read that there's a lot of myth revolving around St. Patrick's Day. Some really big ones, like whether or not green is significant, corned beef and cabbage, the luck of the Irish. A lot of these things are like almost debunked as being traditionally Irish, if you will, and more of this American version of it. How much have you heard of that? And do you have any St. Patrick's Day myths that you can debunk for us?
Well, one of the reasons why green has become associated with Ireland and St. Patrick's Day is, I mean, Ireland, they refer to their place where they live as the Emerald Isle, or then they refer to it as having 40 shades of green. So when you look around, you know, it is a very, very green country.
Yeah.
One of the things that we associate with St. Patrick is the shamrock. And by the way, if it has four leaves, it is not a shamrock. If it has four leaves, it's a four-leaf clover. And yes, it's supposed to bring luck, but that is not a shamrock. Shamrock only has three.
Oh, okay.
But the reason why that's associated with St. Patrick is it is the three, you know, God, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. So the three,
the Trinity.
Yeah. The Trinity. Did he chase the snakes out of Ireland? As far as we know, there weren't any snakes in Ireland, so, you know, chasing them out is probably apocryphal.
Okay, those are good ones. So is it the mission of the Irish Club of Alaska to, like, educate the rest of us on these things and point out some of these myths? Do you do educational events like that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely. And one of the things about the event that we had yesterday, the afternoon in Ireland, as I say, we do have music, of course, and dancing, of course. But the other thing we try to do is when people sing their songs, very often those songs do tell a story or do tell about something that informs us about some aspect of history or heritage. The other thing that we do is we try to include something that your listeners may not know about is in Ireland, they had a system of laws and governance that it was called the Brehon Laws. And one of the things that we try to do is in the afternoon in Ireland, we try to give a little lesson in the Brehon Laws. And it's really interesting when you look into them because a lot of what those laws taught or guided, they exist in our laws. And so it's an interesting tie-in, you know, between the way the Irish in those olden times and we in modern America live our lives. So it's fun.
Can you give us an example of one of them?
Well, for one thing, women were able to not only be rulers, but they were able to be the chief, what they're called bards, which are the singers and the bringers of information, but also lawyers. So they had a very high place in the society. They weren't subservient to men. The other thing was, for example, if you have a beehive, right, and your bees, you know how they swarm, your bees decide that they don't like your hives anymore and they swarm over on my property.
Uh-huh.
Who owns them? You know, do you get them back? Do I have to make sure you get them back or do I get to keep them? So Brehon Laws, they were based a lot on an agrarian way of living. And so who was preeminent in some of these arrangements with how money gets exchanged? Of course, some of them were a little odd, so about how a husband doesn't give his wife, I'm trying to remember if it was a necklace or something. Anyway, she can divorce him. So I mean, they were different.
If he doesn't give a necklace.
Yeah, does not, yes.
Yeah, right. As opposed to now, if you give the wrong thing.
Right, yeah.
So wait, what happens with the bees? Are they mine or are they yours?
Well, see, that we would have to go to one of the courts.
Okay.
And
take it to court.
It would have to be decided. And it was very situational. And one of the aspects of that might be, did you have other bees or was this your only queen? You know, it was a way to make sure that the decisions about who owns what, based on the fact that everybody needed to not win, but everybody needed to be fair to both sides.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we can't run out of time in our discussion without talking about leprechauns, so I'm going to talk to you about that just for a minute. It's one of my favorite contrasts between like the American and Irish versions of St. Patrick's Day. America has this depiction of the leprechaun that's really cartoony and obsessed with gold, but the Irish version is not that, right? It's very different.
Right. But what you have to remember, Dave, is, remember I told you that there's this other world, right? And in the other world, there are many different kinds of, I mean, there are fairies, there are banshees, there are leprechauns. So the leprechauns, they are not bad, but they aren't the upright citizens of the upper world, shall we say. You know, they can do things that are play tricks and that sort of thing. So they're sort of like the bad boys of the other world.
So they're somewhere between the Lucky Charm mascot and that horror movie franchise Leprechaun,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Starring Warwick Davis there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think more toward the less serious, not the more evil.
Yes. I want to see if we can teach our listeners some Gaelic, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Do you have any phrases that are easy to learn and remember so we can impress people at our St. Patrick's parties later today?
Yeah.
I just need one going out.
Yeah. Well, when you're at a party and, you know, you want to raise your glass, and what you're going to say is you're going to say sláinte.
Sláinte?
Sláinte. Okay. And that means health. To your health.
To your health.
Sláinte.
Okay. Sláinte.
Yes. Now, if you want to really impress people, you can say sláinte agus tonsha. Sláinte agus tonsha. And that means health and wealth.
Oh, okay.
So you're wishing everybody health and wealth.
Sláinte
agus
tonsha. Oh, tonsha with a T.
Yeah, T, tonsha.
All right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And then I don't know if I'll be able to. The way you say a happy St. Patrick's Day is Lofela Porik Hanagwit. Lafela Porik Hanagwit.
Lafera?
Lafela.
Lafela.
Lafela Porik.
Porik.
Hana.
Hana.
Gwit.
Gwit.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm not remembering this one tonight,
but
that's okay.
I know. Lafela Porik Hanagwit, or Hanagwit, if you're doing the Munster.
And that's for Happy St. Patrick's
that's
Day.
Happy St. Patrick's
All right.
Day. And then, you know, the word crack, like I
yep.
said,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we're going to party and it's going to be good crack.
Or, good crack.
Or amazing crack if it's really a great party.
That one I won't be forgetting.
And then if you want to, another sort of easy one is if you want to say hello, it's Gia Gwitch.
Gia Gwitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Gia Gwitch.
Gia Gwitch. It's fun to say, too. Try.
Yeah.
Give it a try.
And see, if you say hello to me, you say Gia Gwitch a Kate.
Gia Gwitch a Kate.
And then I say back to you, Dias Mura Gwitch a Dave. So I've got a little bit more to say when I'm responding.
Yes. Also nice to meet you. Is that kind of what it?
Yeah.
A little extra in there.
Yeah. What you're literally saying, Dia is God. So you're literally saying God with you.
Oh, wow. That's quite the praise. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what are you going to be doing this St. Patrick's Day?
Well, since our celebration was yesterday, I'll probably have some Irish whiskey, you know, because, you know, and not green beer, by the way, you know,
right. So,
but Irish whiskey.
Good stuff.
And I won't be drinking it. The Irish Club is getting kind of famous for our Irish whiskey balls.
Okay.
And it's kind of a cross between candy and a cookie, and they're round, of course. And so I'll have probably a couple of those and I don't know. Maybe some corned beef, but in a sandwich.
So you're going to imbibe your whiskey through dessert. I like that. How do you make an Irish whiskey ball?
Well, you make crumbs out of vanilla wafers, and you mix that with powdered sugar and pecans that are chopped fairly fine, and Irish whiskey, of course, and Karo syrup, light Karo syrup.
Okay.
And a little bit of butter, and this is a secret ingredient, which now everybody will know, instant espresso granules.
Oh, yeah.
It gives it a richness, you know. So then you make the balls and then you roll them in more powdered sugar. It's got the more of a texture of a truffle, you know, the candy truffle.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And sometimes people make them with chocolate, but our Irish club recipe does not use chocolate.
Oh, okay. Would you be willing to share that recipe with our listeners?
Sure.
We can put it on the website.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
So make your own Irish whiskey balls.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank my guest, Kate Odell. She's the president of the Irish Club of Alaska. Kate, thanks for coming in and helping us celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Garumagat.
Oh, yeah. I should have said it the right way.
No. That was thank you.
Okay. Yes. No, I should have said thank you in Irish. Yeah. Oh, well, after this short break, we'll have some Irish music for you performed here in the studio. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
Alaska Public Media is all about community. Wear your community on your sleeve with the purchase of branded clothes and collectibles from our online store. Visit alaskapublic.org/shop.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day. And I'm very excited because with me now in the studio are some musicians who are going to play us some Irish songs. Terry McCoy, John and Vicky Lewis, and Donna Fury. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So if you could just really quickly for our listeners go around the room and say your name and what instrument you play.
Sure. My name is John Lewis. We came to Alaska from Aberdeen, Scotland. And primarily I play the guitar. I'm dabbling with a 5-string banjo, and I play the Celtic drum, the Bowron, that Terry's going to be playing today. But today I'll be playing the guitar.
Perfect. Thank you. Terry?
I'm Terry McCoy. I am a Bowron player and a singer, and I've got my new Shruti box with me, too, which is a drone instrument.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Vicky, and I'm playing the whistles today. A couple of a D whistle and a G whistle, and I also play the flute.
Hi, I'm Donna Fury, and I play the concertina. I played the fiddle for a long time, but I started playing the concertina probably 10 years ago, and it's just so much fun. So I primarily am playing tunes on the concertina.
Well, I only knew about half of those instruments. So there's a couple I did not recognize. Vicky, yours is the Shruti box?
No, that's me.
Terry, you have the...
It's called a Shruti box. It's actually an Indian instrument by way of China, but it's a close cousin of the European harmonium.
And could we just get you to play a few notes of it so we can get the listeners a little taste early?
Yeah. I'll give you a C chord because that's a fun one.
And it looks like almost like a small briefcase with a very...
Yeah, it's
fancy.
A tiny little briefcase. It has a bellows in the back, and the front is set up like a chromatic keyboard. Basically, it goes from, this one is tuned to the key of C, so it goes from C4 to C3, and it's a drone.
And very much like an accordion, you kind of manipulate that sound by moving that flap on the back.
It's the bellows and the voices in the front.
Thank you for that.
And it's mostly used by singers, but like I said, we were playing around with it and it went great with a whistle, so we brought it along.
And Vicky, the whistle, I'm assuming we're not talking about like the police whistle or the lifeguard whistle. What is your whistle?
It's the actual make of this one is a Burke whistle. You can get all sorts of different made whistles. It's more like a recorder, like the flute is played at the side.
Yeah.
This is played more like a recorder. It doesn't have a hole at the back, though. It's just got the holes at the front. And as I said, this is a G, and the smaller one is D.
Right. And yeah, they do look like fancy recorders made of metal. Yeah. Okay. And I know concertina, I know guitar, but we're going to get into all those instruments in just a minute here. So how did you all start playing music together?
I actually met John at the Petroleum Club, and it was at a wedding, and John was in his full kit, his kilt and the whole shooting match, and we got to chatting and started talking about Bowrons.
That's right.
And from there, I guess I knew Donna before I knew John and Vicky, but yeah, we all kind of coalesced around Susie's. It was sort of the heartbeat of the Irish music community. A lot of people who came to town doing shows and stuff would end up there afterwards playing these impromptu sessions till 2-3 in the morning, and Ben was always in the back making something delicious, and we just sat there and drank and ate and played tunes till we all had to go home.
Sounds great. And that was the other instrument I wanted to ask about. It was the Bauron?
Yeah.
And what is that?
That is a traditional frame drum. They're traditionally made out of goatskin, although there's people who've made them out of different stuff. Now, this one is a goatskin Bauron. It's actually still got the fur on it. And you play it with a stick that's called a tipper, and it kind of sounds like this.
Ooh, that's a nice sound, rich sound. You said it's got goat skin on it?
Yeah, it's this one's a goat skin. It's also got a spine. This is kind of a little thing that if you get the skin from the very back of the goat where the spine was, you get really nice resonance and you get a lot of variety in tone. So.
Oh, perfect. Well, let's find a way to hear some of these great instruments we're talking about and actually hear them all playing together. What is the first song you'll want to play for us today?
The first tune is a hornpipe, right, guys? Mm-hmm. It's a hornpipe called The Rights of Man, and it's going from that into a song called Eileen Og, or The Pride of Petrovor.
Wasn't she the pride of Petrovor? But her beauty made us all so shy. Not a man among us could look her in the eye. Boys, oh boys, sure that's the reason why we're in mourning for the pride of Petrovor. I lean off, my heart is growing gray ever since the day you wandered far away. I lean off, there's good fish in the sea, but there's none of them like the pride of Petrovor. Friday at the fair at Ballantubber, Eileen met McGrath the cattle jobber. I'd like to set my mark upon the robber, for he stole away the pride of Petrovor. He never seemed to see the girl at all, even when she ogled him from underneath her shawl. Looking big and masterful while she was looking small, most provoking for the pride of Petrovor. Eileen, oh, his heart is growing gray ever since the day you wandered far away. I mean, oh, there's good fish in the sea, but there's none of them like the pride of Petrovor. So it went as it was in the beginning. Eileen Ogue was bent upon the winning. Big McGrath contentedly was grinning, playing courted by the pride of Petrovor. Says he, I know a girl who could knock you into fits. At that, Eileen nearly lost her wits. The upshot of the ruction was that now the robber sits with his arm around the pride of Petrovor. Eileen Ogue, my heart is growing grey ever since the day you wandered far away. Eileen Ogue, there's good fish in the sea, but there's none of them like the pride of Petrovor. Now, boys, oh, boys, with fate is hard to grapple. Of me, I, tis Eileen was the apple. Now to see her walking up to chapel with the hardest-featured man in Petrovor. And now, boys, this is all I have to say. When you do your court and make no display, if you want him to run after you, then look the other way, for they're mostly like the pride of Petrovor. Eileen Ogue, my heart is growing grey ever since the day you wandered far away. Eileen Ogue, there's good fish in the sea, but there's none of them like the pride of Petrovor. Eileen Ogue, my heart is growing grey ever since the day you wandered far away. Eileen Ogue, there's good fish in the sea, but there's none of them like the pride of Petrovor.
Beautiful. Oh, beautiful. I love it. I'm going to add some more applause. Mine isn't enough. Okay, there now. Yay. Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you. So I was able to pull some facts out of that song and what it's about. But what is the story of the Pride of Petrovor?
Yeah, the Pride of Petrovor, as far as I understand it, it's about a lady who was the pride of the village of Petrovor. And I first heard it with that arrangement in the early 80s by an Irish band called De Dannon, who recorded it, but it's only on a record. It doesn't appear anywhere these days on a tape or a CD. And the only place you can hear De Dannon play in that is on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and look up De Dannon and the Pride of Petrovor and the Rights of Man, and that's where you can find it.
And this is one of those tunes that you might call music hall Irish. It was written by, I think he was an Irish author, but it was late 19th, early 20th century. There was kind of a craze for Irish music. It didn't really matter how authentic it was. like John mentioned, the group De Dannon recorded it. And they sort of embraced a lot of what we would call Irish hall music. Some people are really purists about it, but basically they just, anything that was a fun little tune, they embraced it. And so we can hear it today.
Nice. Yeah. Is there a lot of generational traditions or storytelling that's passed down, like in the style of the song you just did, with Irish music?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the ballads, like American ballads, a lot of them were ways of conveying stories back in the days before, you know, internet or media or even radio. People would write songs and then go about, and there were people who made their whole livings by traveling about the countryside playing tunes and singing songs about stuff that happened in the other county, and people were always excited to hear about it.
Do you have a favorite story that is passed down, or a favorite story in an Irish song?
What's that one you sing where the lady, she faces the wall?
Oh, yeah. That's one that Kathy Ryan recorded, I Lie Next to the Wall.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that one's based on true story, but basically that story is about a young woman who's going down the road and encounters the gamekeeper on her father's land, and he really is interested in her and wants her to come home with him. And she sort of says, well, if you can do all these impossible tasks, I'll come home with you. And then he proceeds to do all the impossible tasks. And she goes home with him. The end.
Riveting.
But no, there's a lot of really good.
I mean, I'm impressed. What did she make him do?
Oh, yeah. They were just weird tasks.
More weird than impressive. All right. I want to ask this before we run out of time. How did each of you find your way to these instruments, these very unique kind of intricate instruments?
You know, I fell into Irish music because there was just a lot of generous people that were accomplished musicians that would spend time and help you within the community. There was really a really robust Irish music scene here probably in the 80s, 90s. I mean, there was really a lot. So I like all kinds of music, but that's, you know, what I was lucky enough to fall into. So, and I have daughters that play, you know, we played music together too. And I think that's another thing about traditional music, which is so wonderful, is you could sit with, because kids are amazing usually, you can sit in a group and play with kids that are 8 and somebody that's 80. And it's a very social thing. It's a very community-minded, really healthy experience in music, and at any, however anybody wants to enjoy music. But for us, the Irish traditional music has been really a great community builder and built a really rich tapestry of friends and networks, you know, all over the country, really, and in Alaska, of course, from playing music together.
Great answer. I love that. And Donna, why specifically the concertina?
Well, I was at a fiddle camp, because I've gone to a lot of fiddle camps over the years.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. And there was an amazing Cormac Bagley, who was the guest artist playing concertina there, and it blew my mind. And it just happened to be that somebody, they had an instrument swap, and I came home with a concertina and taught myself, you know, and then now, you know, with the internet, and you can do lessons, and just over the years, and just hanging out a lot in these long winters in Alaska, working on tunes. It's a healthy thing to do.
Yeah. Did anybody else attend a camp for their instrument, or how did you each find your way to your instruments?
I picked up the baron. I grew up listening to Irish music and always loved it, but I was actually working in Denali at the dinner theater up there, and our day was like 4 p.m. to midnight, and of course, after that, they roll up the streets, and there's nothing to do, but I knew a guy who was a baron player, and I was like, ooh, I want to do that. So I spent a lot of time sitting in the cabin at like midnight and just after eating supper and just whapping away until it didn't sound too bad. And that's where I got started on this one.
And John?
Golly, I've been playing the guitar for 65 years. And when I was a kid, I always wanted to play the guitar, but my hands were too small. So I played a ukulele, learned a ukulele. And then I guess I really got into the guitar properly during the early 70s when I lived in London and had the benefit of playing with some of the great English and Scottish folk musicians of the early 70s. And I learned 90% of the music I know and the different styles from those people. And then it just blossomed as I went around the world and lived in different places, met different people. And you always learn off others. I mean, never had formal lessons, but you can't say you're self-taught. You're actually taught by the other people that help you.
Well, I like that, yeah. And what about you, Vicky, with the whistle there? That seems like such a beautiful instrument, but also kind of like a dangerous instrument. Like if you make a mistake, it has that pitch and frequency that really sticks out, right?
Yep, that's true. You've got to be careful with that. It's a really easy instrument to travel around with.
Oh, yeah.
You can just get in your backpack or whatever. Mm-hmm. I originally started, my dad encouraged me to start, and I played the recorder to start, and then he used to play the saxophone and the clarinet. I tried the clarinet, didn't get on with that, and he suggested the flute. So I sort of started with the flute, with lessons, and I read music and stuff. And it wasn't until later on when I met John and we traveled that I got more into the whistles and into the Celtic type scene. But I love it. As I say, it's very easy to travel around with and plays well with the other instruments.
Plays well with others. I like mm-hmm. it. Well, I think we have time for maybe one more song. So if we have one last song to play you out on.
Yeah, and just to be a purist, if it's got words, it's a song, and if it has no words, it's a tune.
Oh, okay,
and
yes.
Some people would get real snippy about that.
Present company excluded.
Absolutely. I'm just like, yeah, what
else? So are we going to hear a song or a tune?
Tunes? Do you want to do the waltz or do you want to do the jigs?
Flatwater Fran.
Flatwater Fran. Oh, yeah, because now I can play the Schrödi box.
Yeah, let's hear the Schrödi box.
So who's the hell we starting this?
It's a G, right?
Yeah. We decided to start. Did we all start together?
I think John's going to start it.
it. Thank you. So if people are hearing this music and they're loving it, where is somewhere that they can see you perform?
Well,
around town.
I play in the kitchen at people's houses generally.
Okay.
So, I mean, there used to be, you know, when Susie was here, we had, that was a gold mine of great, really regular music sessions. And I think there are other folks playing around, and I don't, at different, you know, not as many venues that things have closed during the pandemic, of course. Mm-hmm. But I know there are some folks that play at Organic Oasis on a Tuesday night. It's not something that I get to very often, but nowadays we're playing at people's houses, which is where the music sounds best, in the kitchen. Like, you know, we get together and eat and drink and play tunes in the house.
And, yeah.
And we've done, like last year, John and Vicky and I did a set at Folk Festival. That's always a great place to go hear some really mm-hmm. awesome local music.
Perfect, yeah.
And I think these guys are all going down to Juneau as well to play tunes. I unfortunately can't go with them.
Yeah.
I should also mention the Irish clubs has various occasional shows throughout the year. And one that was just yesterday on Sunday, the 16th, was the afternoon in Ireland. So that was at the 49th State Brewing Company. If you were not fortunate enough to go see that, it will be put up on the club's website. They're videoing it and they're taping it as well. So you can check that out.
Perfect. And they can stream it for their St. Patrick's party later
Absolutely.
Tonight. All right. That's awesome. Well, thank you very much. That was a beautiful song. And thank you for all for coming in and playing some Irish music
Thanks
for us.
Thanks for having us.
It's
been great fun.
A lot of fun
awesome.
Getting us together again to practice a wee bit.
Yeah. And you come play in my kitchen anytime.
All right.
That's the way I got to get you again. So
thank you.
I want to thank my guests, Terry McCoy, John and Vicky Lewis, and Donna Fury. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art.
I'm joined by this year's competition winner, Henry Nichols, and runner-up, Bryce Herta. Nichols is a junior in high school and plays the piano. Herta is a senior and plays violin, who we're actually hearing right now. Nichols speaks next.
Well, I started when I was 7 years old. My parents bought a piano at five, and then eventually I just kind of like showed a little interest in it.
Yeah, so they didn't force you to take
no,
lessons?
No, they're very like lenient, like, you know, you can play if you want, basically.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, personally, I took piano lessons when I was a kid, and it was definitely forced upon me, and then I took years to look back and appreciate it after the fact, but that's cool that it was self-motivated. How about you, Bryce?
Apparently I wanted to play piano when I was really young. 4 years old, I tried to play piano for 2 years, and then I quit, and so I went to violin at six, and I've been playing violin ever since then.
Yeah, what attracted you to the violin?
Honestly, I have no idea. I've forgotten. It's a long time ago. I've just stuck with it the entire time, and it's definitely gotten more enjoyable in the later years.
Yeah, this could go to either of you guys, but have you found that your enjoyment of music has, playing music has increased the more competent you've gotten at your instruments?
I definitely say so. Like in the beginning, I didn't really show much passion in it. Like for the first 4 years of playing, I was sort of just a hobby I did after school. But then as I learned more about how to actually play the instrument, like the technique involved in it, and that allowing me to play more difficult repertoire helped me form a passion with it for sure.
But you, Bryce?
Yeah, I think definitely after I started joining ensembles and things like that, I joined the youth orchestra. Like 3 years ago, I think, and that really propelled me to get better at my instrument a lot faster than the prior so many years or whatever.
When you guys are performing, I mean, obviously this stuff's a little bit more in the classical realm, but I mean, do you have, even within that realm or outside of the classical realm, do you have a preference on, you know, styles of music, genres, stuff like that that you play?
Well, now I'm playing more like romantic era music. So, for example, I'm preparing for the UAA competition with a Tchaikovsky piece and a Debussy piece. So right now it's definitely focused on romantic era, but I did a couple years ago really fell in love with like classical era, like Haydn and stuff like that. But my teacher definitely assigns me like more of a romantic era pieces to learn expression and phrasing in music. So
yeah, what do you find appealing about it, I guess?
About romantic era music? Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, for music, the point of it is like to express emotion. Romantic era music just does that so beautifully and wonderfully that it's just so much fun to play. Not saying that like classical era and Baroque style isn't, but I think that's more of a focus in romantic era music to, you know, tug on people's heartstrings.
So. Yeah, that kind of basic purpose of music, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Bryce, how about you? Styles of music you prefer? Anything like that?
I would say I like listening to romantic pieces and playing romantic pieces just because they're so forceful and powerful, or they can be. But I've definitely gained a respect for like classical pieces because I'm playing Mozart in the competition, and I've been playing that for years now. And it's hard to gain respect if you don't have the skill level for those pieces because they're super technical and they have to be so perfect, even if they're not really like virtuistic in that sense. But playing that for years has really let me gain a lot of respect. And then also, I've also just started becoming interested in Baroque music kind of and Baroque interpretation. So I have a Baroque bow that I've been borrowing, and I love playing Bach at like 4:15 just to mess around. Yeah, I did it in a competition at one point, but I don't have any formal training in Baroque, so they saw right through me, but it was still fun.
Well, sounds like you need to get in touch with the Anchorage Festival of Music.
Yeah, or Don Lindsay or something like that.
But yeah, anyway, so yeah, it's super cool. That's awesome to hear about kind of your other kind of varied interests in music and stuff like that. But I mean, moving on to the competition. So does one of you want to kind of take the lead and explain to the listeners kind of how it worked and what you had to do for the competition?
I guess I'm starting. So I was originally going to do the AYO concerto competition, but then I figured out kind of later in it that I couldn't do it because I wasn't an orchestra member. So I was preparing this piece in August, and then I stopped because I realized I couldn't do it anymore. And then I sort of, through a friend, I figured out about the ACO, Anchorage Civic Orchestra concerto competition, like a month before the audition date. And then so I just had to learn the other half of the piece and like revamp it all up. And thankfully it was Christmas break, so I had a bunch of time to devote to it. And yeah, it was just a lot of hard work very quickly. And that's basically how I prepared for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Bryce, okay, so you pick your piece, you get it all prepared, and then what do you do once you have it kind of like, you know, ready to go? What's the next step in the competition?
You just do it over and over again. I mean, I auditioned with this piece for this competition last year as well, just after I had learned it. So it was pretty abysmal, actually, looking back at it. But playing that for a whole year at performance level, and like different performances, different competitions, that's kind of how I prepared with it, just to get that cool-headedness to play something so precise. Yeah, I also tried to do some AYO competitions and stuff like that, but there's some really good cello players right now who are kind of taking it away.
What did the audition process look or feel like for you, Henry?
Well, I did get there a little early, and I asked them if I could play the piano a little bit to just get a feel of the action in the keys and stuff. So that definitely helped. And then they showed me like a piano downstairs that was incredibly out of tune that I could practice on. And then I didn't like go through the entire piece before I had to play it, because then it would kind of like mentally exhausted me and emotionally exhausted me to play it through. So I just sort of worked on small little sections, kind of like how I practice too. I only practice in like small little blocks and chunks of the music. And I did that the same before I had to play it. And then when I played it, my teacher always said, you know, you shouldn't have any responsibility when you're performing. It's just for fun, really. So, and then I just tried to let go of everything I had practiced and just play, basically.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, Bryce, sounds like you've done some other auditions and stuff like that too. I mean, do you, and this could go to both of you, I mean, do you guys get nervous doing these at this point with your skill level? Or, I mean, is it just kind of part of the gig?
I mean, of course you're going to get a little bit nervous. The Civic Orchestra competition is a lot more welcoming than others that I've been to. They don't stop you halfway through and things like that. But yeah, you're going to get nervous, and something you have to accept that sometimes. You have to accept that you're going to be nervous, and that's part of preparing for a competition, is mitigating what you'll do when you're nervous rather than trying not to be nervous.
Henry, you did yours on piano. What was the piece again? And then why did you pick it?
So I played a piece, a concerto by Alexander Scriabin, his only concerto, an F-sharp minor. And I played the first movement of it. It's like 8 minutes long. And I didn't really pick it out. My teacher kind of assigned it to me as like a piece that's like, hey, this is at your level and it can push you further and stuff. And it's also, you know, virtuosic and stuff like that. Absolutely love the piece, especially the second movement of the piece is so wonderful.
Yeah, and Bryce, what was the piece and why did you pick it?
So I'll be playing Mozart's fourth concerto in D major. And then also, like Henry, I didn't really pick it. It was just something I had prepared. In fact, I did not want to play it at all. I've been playing it so long, I didn't want to play it at all. But it was the only thing I really had prepared at that level. So it gets more fun. You know, there's like a dip. It gets really fun while mm-hmm. you're learning it, and then it gets really boring, and then it goes up and gets fun again once you start learning the little techniques and things like that.
Totally. I mean, is that just kind of part of your job as musicians? Is you're kind of like, well, I do have this repertoire that, you know, it's in my pocket. I might not love it, but yeah, it's one of the ones that I've got going. Like, is that kind of fairly common?
Yeah. I mean, especially at our level, I think, where we don't have the experience of a really deep repertoire list. So totally. Just have to pick what's there.
Totally.
Yeah, that's true.
I know that you're motivated to practice because you want to get better, but I mean, are you still picking up your instruments or putting your hands on the instrument just for fun? Like, just you feel inspired? And
Yeah, definitely. I'd say so. Sometimes it's nice to have just like a piece on the side just for the sake of enjoyment that isn't related to any sort of competition, to just for the sake of, you know, the love of the piece and stuff like that. Although I, that's not saying I don't have the love for, I mean, the Scriven piece is like impossible to hate. It's so amazing and beautiful, but it's definitely nice to have just a piece that's just for the sake of enjoyment. Yeah. And I definitely do have pieces like that.
Yeah. For me, I think it's probably easier with a violin, but I try and have an ensemble that's active outside of my lessons and outside of my school and things like that, that we can just mess around with. Like last summer I had a quartet that kind of did some gigs and stuff like that. It was just fun. We just learned a bunch of new pieces and things like that.
Yeah, keep it interesting, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, you guys get to play with the Anchorage Civic Orchestra on April 5th.
Yep.
And how are you feeling about that? I mean, I'm sure you guys at your level, you've done some pretty decent size performances and stuff. But yeah, how are you feeling about this upcoming one?
Honestly, it feels like so far in the future, I haven't really mentally prepared for it at all. But I feel like once rehearsals start happening, then I will definitely feel excited for it, honestly, because it's just amazing to be able to, you know, have an orchestra, you know, accompany. It's just amazing. Yeah, it definitely does feel far into the future, though. Yeah,
so. Yeah, totally. You'll get there when you get there.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you, Bryce? How are you feeling about
I'm really excited. I'm excited to play. I'm excited to rehearse probably more. It's going to be really fun just to interact with the orchestra like that. I've played with my high school orchestra a few times, but with solos and things like that, but never with something with a group that's more higher level like this.
Well, I guess, you know, kind of looking to the future, are you planning on continuing music after high school, or are we planning on going into college and maybe pursuing it there? Yeah, what are our plans, Henry, after?
I am still asking myself that question,
I
honestly.
No pressure.
Yeah, it's a really hard decision between, so I have been considering going to like a conservatory or something along those lines, but I also have a great passion for like math and science and stuff like that. And then of course there's like the money aspect of like being a musician and stuff like that. That's not extremely viable, especially when you have a, you know, something as a competitive field, like classical music is insanely competitive, and you really do have to be the best of the best to make a living doing it. So I'm still not quite sure where I land on colleges, though. But those are definitely the two choices, were like math or music for me. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, do you anticipate, say you do go into kind of like the sciences, uh-huh. you'll still pursue music, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely always have music in my life. I'm never going to like drop it. In fact, I remember like on vacations during summer stuff, when I had to not play for a week, I almost went insane. Like I couldn't do it. So like I definitely will have it in my life. Depending on whether I'll pursue it, I feel like that's a different story in that case.
Totally. Yeah. And Bryce, how about you? Plans? Or you don't have to have any at all either.
No, I do. I'm a year ahead of Henry because of just grade-wise. So I'm going to go to Boston University in the fall. I've been accepted into their business school, so I'll major in probably finance is what I'm looking at right now. But I'm going to try and minor. They have a minor in musical performance, so I will try and minor in their music school as well. The teacher, one of the violin teachers, taught my violin teacher, Marcio Candido,
oh, awesome.
In his PhD, so or his master's, I think. So it'll be cool to have that connection and study there.
That was my conversation with Anchorage Civic Orchestra High School Concerto Competition winner Henry Nichols and runner-up Bryce Herda. They'll be performing with the ACO on Saturday, April 5th in the Sydney Lawrence Theater. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to all of our guests, Kate O'Dell, Terry McCoy, John and Vicki Lewis, and Donna Fury. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.